No, no, you logged out, right?
Yeah, I logged out.
And you closed it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we had her log out and close it. So. So Carol, try to come in as an attendee. Don't open Zoom. Just, I mean, you know, go to Zoom, but
yes,
don't log in.
I'll try to, yeah, no problem. I'll use my channel. So
oh, okay. I'll promote you to anything. Oh.
Sorry, it's windy out here. I've got to fix my hair. Oh, man. We need dust control out on 68. I'll tell you, it's windy and dusty today. Whew. Good to see everybody. Oh, Jack, you're muted there. Okay. There you go.
Supposed to get windier tonight.
God, yeah, no kidding. And good thing we're not in the Indian Ocean. Whew. That's windy. I think I read in today's paper they were clocking, what, 130 miles an hour or something.
Wow.
Yeah, no complaints. I did some hiking down in, down in the Indians area, South Monterey County. And boy, I'll tell you, the good news is even with as little rain as we got, there's a lot of new vegetation coming back.
Yeah, it bounced back quickly.
Yeah, is that where you go fishing, Chris?
It is. I go hiking up a few miles and hit some of those creeks.
I had my son in a lawn chair out in the middle of the creek and, you know, peppered a bunch of bread around him. And, man, those trout came.
They were going.
Oh, he loved it. There was probably 30 of them surrounded
that's
him.
Awesome.
A couple of good size, you know, 8-inch, you know, to him, that's
yeah.
That's big. You know, he's giggling as they're nipping at his feet.
Hard to beat.
right on. Okay, we got the mayor of King City on the line. All right, look at that.
Good to see you all.
Okay, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, we're. Oh, can you mute your computer? Not your speaker, but. Yeah.
Oh, so I think we need one more contestant. 1, 2, 3, 4. I think I count 8, and.
Oh, yeah, we're good.
Are we good now? Okay, look at that. 1:30 on the button. This is the Board of Directors meeting for the Monterey Bay Air Resources District. I want to thank everybody for attending today. We'll go ahead and call the meeting to order Wednesday, May 19th, 2021, 1:30 p.m. we'll go ahead and start with the pledge. Let's see, Jack, you want to lead us?
Certainly will. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much for doing that. Anne, why don't we go ahead and call the roll?
All righty. A little bit. Okay, Director Kosmicki? Director Carbone?
Here.
Director Coonerty?
Here.
Director Friend?
Here.
Director LaBarre?
Present.
Director Lopez?
Here.
Director McShane?
Here.
Director Askew? Director Phillips? Director Story?
Here.
Director Dillis?
Here.
Did I miss anybody?
Anne, I think John, Director Phillips is in the attendees.
Okay, we'll get him in here then. Give me just a moment. Oh yeah, we got a few people in there. Okay. Thank you, Amy. Okay, so as the last roll call name, Director Phillips.
Here, I thought you didn't like me or something.
Ah, never. We have a quorum.
Excellent. Okay, well, today's an exciting meeting, that's for sure. We've got 7 items on the consent and our budget hearing and a hearing on fees. So we get right to it. I'll just go ahead and begin with a quick report on our budget, personnel, and nominating committee. And I guess, well, more than anything, before I jump into that, let's go ahead to public comment. Sorry for skipping that. Any members of the public wishing to address the board on items not on the agenda, now's your time. I'm just looking to see if there's any attendees that raised their hand. I don't see any. Do you, Ann?
No, I do not.
Okay. And have you received any public comments via email?
No, I haven't. Not at this time.
Okay. So with that out of the way, we'll go right into the report from the Budget, Personnel, and Nominating Committee. We did meet and we recommended approval of our coming budget. There was good discussion and a few suggestions, if you will, which may come up. And we also took a look at our changes to our budget. We discussed that. So that's coming as well. So outside of that, nothing more to report. Unless there's any questions from board members or members from the public, we can move on to our advisory council report. Was there an advisory council meeting, Rich?
There was not. We hope to meet this coming month.
Okay, great. So with that, any referrals or any comments not on the agenda, relating to items not on the agenda from board members? Okay, I don't see any. So that leads us to our next item, and that's the report from our air pollution control officer, Rich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, members of the board. First order of business is consistent with the governor's blueprint for opening California. We'll be opening our office doors to the public on June 15th. And we hope to also bringing staff back as well. We've updated our current COVID-19 response plan, and we hope to update it again once Cal OSHA has, and we're told, and we've seen some advanced copy of, they'll be removing some of the mask requirements and so forth to be consistent with what's in the CDC and the California health requirements. But it looks like that folks that haven't been vaccinated will still be required to have masks. We haven't done a formal survey yet, but it looks like most of our staff have been vaccinated. So that's really good news. And then I just also should say that based on a conversation with a number of the board members here, as well as the boards I sit on, along with many of you, We've decided to take a hybrid approach for our meetings going forward. And that means that folks that are in Santa Cruz or down South County, we hope to add capacity to our boardroom to allow in-person as well as conference, teleconferencing meetings. We're looking at some new technology. I think San City has already employed the OWL, which is a tracking camera and microphone, which is really nice technology. So we'll be deploying that in our boardroom as well. So we won't start the hybrid meetings until August. We're dark in July. And then the next day is June 16th, right after we reopen. So we'll just postpone it until the next board meeting, which is August, to see how the hybrid meeting works. And folks will be welcome to be here. And we'll be following whatever guidelines are established at that date. We try to remain flexible and dynamic because, you know, it's taken quite a while. We didn't think we'd be out so long with folks working away from the office. So we'll see how that goes and we'll make appropriate adjustments as needed. As I mentioned last time, we have new recruitments underway. Of course, Anne's still here. She's going to be here till the end of July. We've received 8 applications for her position. We'll be having interviews shortly. We're also extending the application period for one of our air monitoring specialist position openings that was created due to retirement. And we only received 2 applications, so we're hoping to broaden that. And so we're extending the application period for another week. So hopefully we'll get some more candidates. We know we have some pretty good candidates so far, so I'm not too concerned, but we'd like to have a number to choose from. With respect to engineering, and this is my standing marina report, we haven't received any odor complaints since the April board meeting. Unfortunately, we did find that Keith Day started a new pilot project doing aeration on one of the static piles without a permit, without an authority to construct. And that's a little bit problematic. So we're working with them to permit the new operation along with finalizing a permit for an existing windrow compost operation they have. So we know that's probably one of the sources, and I think the public in general feels it's the only source of many do feel it's the only source of the odor. So we want to make sure that they're following the process as laid out in law and our rules. I'm really also proud to let you know that one of our inspectors, Leif Halvorsen, will be participating at the national level with EPA, developing new curricula for source testing. This is when they go out and monitor sources for individual pollutants at the stack typically. And he's got a lot of experience. He worked in a private consulting firm doing this work, and now he's going to be able to lend his skills and abilities on the national front and represent our agency really well. So that's great news. In planning and air monitoring, we've begun the installation of sensors to help monitor smoke for the wildfire season. And you guys already know this, and I probably said this before, this everybody's saying this is going to be the worst wildfire season, as evidenced by the Palisades fire that took off in Southern California over the weekend. I'm not sure where that's at right now, but even with rain, that fire was still raging. So this smoke monitoring network will provide near real-time data, and we're currently building a map to show the locations and try to get concentrations for the community. We hope to have a sensor in each of our cities. So that would be at least 21 sensors. And we're trying to target schools because schools are some of the first institutions to ask us whether it's okay for them to come back to school or stay sheltered in place. So we're also working with the California Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. And just as we're sort of leading the nation right now in the sensor network for wildfire smoke monitoring, we're going to get out in front and trying to determine health values for sub 24-hour exposures. Right now, the air quality index is the best estimate we have for exposures. There's a problem with that because air quality index is for a 24-hour exposure level, and that's where the only health standards are. And also, we only have 6 air quality index monitors really throughout our jurisdiction. We can add to that, but typically that's the main number we have at any given moment. So for somebody who's working in a field, you know, and they get monitoring results 100 miles away or 60 miles away, it's not really going to help determine whether it's safe for them to be working or not. So we hope to have this system set up with a better way to translate the air quality data into meaningful exposure and health information for the public. We're also going to be holding a community air protection program workshop on June 8th to gather input from residents, low income and disadvantaged communities on how to spend incentive grant funds to reduce air pollution in their neighborhoods. Potential projects could be tractor replacements, electrification of on-road and off-road equipment, improved school filtration systems. This is very important now because of wildfire smoke, and air pollution control devices on stationary equipment, or whatever ideas they may present to us. We're certainly open to the interests and needs of the disadvantaged communities. And that's a requirement of being a participant in the Community Air Protection Program grant. Lastly, I just want to let you know, Camp Roberts will attempt to conduct their annual burn of the interior gunnery ranges next week. They always tell us they're going to burn before they have an exercise, and then we get a report that the whole thing caught on fire. And it's going to probably catch on fire if they start the practice without pre-burning. So they're looking at about 9,000 acres of grassland, and this is right at the border of San Luis Obispo County. And we've ticked off San Luis Obispo in years past because of unscheduled burnings that have taken place on Camp Roberts property. So we have been coordinating with the Air District down in San Luis Obispo. And so we hope to reduce any smoke impacts on San Miguel and or Paso Robles area. That concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you, Rich. Any questions for Rich? Just go ahead and raise your hand. Okay, yep, Director Askew. And then we'll go to Director Labar.
Sure. Richard, you mentioned the community meetings for the disadvantaged communities. Will you be sending additional information out for us about when and where those meetings are held?
Yeah, it's typically, saying to the board specifically, we can do that. We typically do announcements to the on our website and sometimes in the newspaper. So I'll let David know to make sure the board members are included.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Director Labar.
Thank you. Rich, I just wanted to clarify. You had mentioned on looking how you're going to collect data for less than 24 hour exposure. And that would be a first in a nation. Is that what you said?
Well, we certainly people have collected data at smaller intervals, but we're going to be, for the purposes of displaying smoke concentrations, yeah, that's going to be one of the first in the nation.
Okay. Something just to consider, my first thought was if there was some way to mimic a breathing pattern and capture those particulates that are in that section of time over time, there might be a way to capture that information and data to show what it means in the real world.
Right. So we're going to try to do that. You know, what works seems to work best is why the AQI is so successful is it has sort of, you know, green for good, yellow for moderate, and then you go down to purple, which is hazardous. And so a lot of time people don't care about the numbers. They just want to know if it's green or good. So we're going to be working with toxicologists at the state to come up with some sort of system that allows us to because the simple fact is, even if you're exposed to high values, if it's for a short duration of time, then your risk is likely lower than if it's a continued period, certainly over 24 hours, for instance. So that's our challenge is to have meaningful information at the sub 24 hour exposure level. But the good news is that one of the problems with the current air quality is that our monitors will show poor air quality. It's still processing previous data from 24 hours before, and the air quality may be vastly improved. Now, they have done some adjustments to the algorithms to sort of more heavily weight the past few hours, but we're still having issues where people will call us and say, it's crystal clear here and your monitor is showing that it's in poor air quality, or vice versa. Your monitor shows that the air quality is really good and we can't even breathe or see across the street. So that's what we hope to resolve and at least get some consistency with what people are observing with what our monitors depict. And certainly with more monitors and with a real-time, near real-time display of those concentrations, that should do a great service for the public.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Chair.
Yep, sure. Great, thank you. Seeing no other hands, we'll go ahead and head to the public. See if I see anything, don't see anything. Anne, did you receive anything? Okay.
No, I did not.
Okay. That's good. Thank you. Okay. Well, with that, we'll move to the consent agenda. There's 7 items on the consent agenda. Are there any board members that would wish to pull an item from the consent? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go to the public. Take a look here. Don't see anything. Didn't receive any comments. Okay, so we are looking for a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Oh. Approval. Thank you.
All right, I got it. Ask you on the approval. That's the motion. Good. And do we have a second?
Second, Phillips.
Thank you. All right, moved by Askew, seconded by Phillips. And let's call the roll.
When I call your name, please answer yes or no, or aye or nay. See, Director Kuzmicki is not here. Director Carbone?
Yes.
Director Coonerty?
Yes.
Director Friend?
Aye.
Director Labar?
Aye.
Director Lopez?
Aye.
Director McShane?
Yes.
Director Askew?
Aye.
Director Phillips?
Aye.
Director Story?
Yes.
And Director Dillis?
Yes.
And the motion passes unanimously with those present.
Thank you, Anne. Great. We'll move on to our regular agenda. And the first item is to hold our first public hearing on the proposed 21-22 fiscal year budget. So with that, Rosa, the floor is yours.
Good afternoon. My name is Rosa Rosales. I'm the Administrative Services Manager. Today I will be presenting the draft budget for the fiscal year 21-22. If you could turn to your, first of all, turn to your page 57 of the agenda page. There's a typo I just wanted to point out. On the third bullet point of salaries and budget, it says a decrease of $342,000. It's actually an increase, so we can make a note on that. That'd be great. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and have a PowerPoint presentation. And let me share my screen. Let's see. More share. Okay. There we go. Share screen. Okay. Can you guys see that? Yes. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So this is a draft budget for the fiscal year 21-22. Our budget goals are to continue the district's mission of assuring healthful air quality in the three counties, Monterey, Santa Cruz, and San Benito, to improve the levels of service and provide education to the public and the regulated community, and to reduce and control the district costs. Our budget adoption process includes a workshop that we had on April 13th via Zoom. We had, I think, one person attend that, but we had no comments. Our initial review by the Budget and Personnel Committee was on April 21st. We had our first hearing. We're having our first hearing with the Board of Directors today, May 19th, and final adoption would be scheduled for June 16th. I'll begin with this first chart. It shows permit fees revenue history dating back to 2000 through the fiscal year 21-22 proposed budget. The blue line on the top, it shows all the permit fees. And the red line at the bottom shows the major sources only. In the past, major sources fees made up about 50% of the district's permit revenues. The projection for 21-22 permit fees is about 2.8 million, which is fairly conservative. And we still have the exposure of the Moss Landing Power Plant potential closure. Currently, our major source revenues is about 16.5%. So you can see the dips in fiscal year 2009 and 10. That was a closure of a Cemex plant closure. And then we've also continually have cancellation of permits from the Moss Landing Power Plant, and we've had some permit cancellation loss also from our other major source of Lawast. The district did not raise any fees last year due to the pandemic. This year, we're proposing a 2% increase, and that's based on CPI for most permit fees, except for the asbestos. The district is also proposing an increase to the city and county per capita contributions, a CPI increase of 2%. Which will go from 47 to 48 cents, and that'll increase our revenues at about $7,600. This slide shows the DMV fees collected through the same time frame. DMV fees account for about 30% of our revenues, and it's our largest source of revenue. We're projecting about 4.1 million in DMV fees for fiscal year 21-22. These fees should support the programs that reduce air pollution from motor vehicles. And this has been a much more reliable source of revenue for our district. So the proposed organization chart that's on page 85, it shows 31 positions. Currently we have 29 positions. We're proposing to add an additional engineer, which is currently vacant. So we budgeted for that position. There'll be 30 budgeted positions. We have one unfilled position in the inspector, which we may or may not fill. Estimated increases to salary and benefits is about $342,000, and that includes a 2% CPI increase. We are currently in negotiations, so that is not a final number. Other increases include step increases, the CalPERS retirement cost increases from 33.6% to 42.6%. There was a slight workers' comp increases, and CalPERS is changing their health plan, so there'll be some increases to the health plans also. Those numbers won't be out until, I believe, July. So on page 82, we have your budget and brief summary, and it summarizes some of the key highlights of the budget. So our total budget's about 19.6 million. That's operating is 6.6, and the non-operating is about 13 million CPI fees. CPI and all fees except for asbestos will have a 2% increase. Total budgeted positions is 30. Our fixed assets purchases will be about $151,000, and that includes cloud services for the database and document management programs, one compliance vehicle, and an ozone analyzer for the air monitoring division. In our budget, we have an estimated deposit to the OPEB of $75,000, but we will be adding to our final budget estimate an estimated $75,000 deposit also to the pension. And then our major grant programs continue. We have the AB 2766, the AB 923, the Carl Moyer program, the wood stove changeout, which will be funded with our clean air fund, and then the CAP and farmer programs. So this chart shows the district's revenue sources. So out of the $13.6 million budgeted for the new fiscal year, our largest source of revenue is the DMV, and that's about $4.2 million, followed by state grants of $3.2 million and permit fees of $2.8 million. In our special fees included our Title V and asbestos, and we have other revenues that includes rent, cost recovery, miscellaneous income. We have our federal grants of $340,000, the offsite mitigation fees, and the Central Coast Community Power Community Energy fees, about $1.3 million. The city and county contributions, $365,000. Interest income, about $183,000. The CARB subvention, $180,000. So the projected expenses for the new fiscal year totals about $19.6 million, which is a decrease of about 7%. So the largest expenditures is the grant programs. That's about $11.5 million. So this is with the assumption that all grants would be funded within the fiscal year. In actuality, grant programs often take more than a year to complete. So they're not paid out in the, they're paid out usually in the future years. Our second largest expenditure is salary and benefits, which total about $4.972 million. That includes the new engineer step increases, CalPERS retirement costs, and yes, that's it. Another significant expenditure is about $838,000 for the district's plug-in Monterey electric vehicle infrastructure program. That's funded through the AB 923 funds. And then we have another large expense category, the professional services. That includes all of our IT services. We have annual software maintenance fees, our ads, auditing fees, rule revision, and consultant fees. We got fixed assets of $151,000, office and building expenses, $488,000, electric vehicle incentive program will be about $500,000. Other admin expenses, $336,000. And then we have other expenditures of $240,000. Okay. Our operating budget, which is shown on page 89. it's a series of budget schedules and includes the budgets for each of funds of the that the district maintains. It's about $6.6 million. We have about $21,000 increase in the permit and Title V revenues as compared to the fiscal year 2021. And this is a fairly conservative estimate. We continue with our state revenues, oil and gas, emission inventories, and AB 617. Our grant admin funds for CAP, Farmer, and Moyer continue, but they have decreased from the previous years. Salaries and benefits increase of $342,000 from the fiscal year 2021 budget. So we're projecting an operating deficit of about $111,942. And that will be covered by our current year's surplus. And it's usually that grant admin monies that will roll over into the new year. Okay, so, this page shows our stationary source program. It's still operating in a deficit. Our permit fees, as you can see, only cover about 78% of our expenses. And we would like to eventually get this up in the 90s. So the deficits in the stationary source and asbestos programs are usually funded through the unrestricted general funds. Okay, the non-operating budget. This shows on page 90. This is where the district accounts for its grant programs and any other non-operating expenditures. The major grant program expenditures, they will include the AB 2766 program for $4.8 million. This includes current and prior year grants. The electric vehicle incentive program, $500,000. AB 923 program, $2.5 million for grants, plus $838,000 for the EV infrastructure projects. The Carl Moyer program, which funds ag and marine vessel engines, is about $973,000. Offsite mitigation grants for ag pumps and school buses is about $150,000. The Central Coast Community Energy grants that'll fund electric buses is $1.2 million. The wood stove changeout, it's about $87,500. CAP grants will be $1.2 million and farmer $551,000. And then we have the OPEB and pension trust deposits of $75,000 each for to fund future retiree benefits. So and finally, this is a summary of our general fund balance. This is where we account for activities of permitting and non-grant activities. There's no new building projects this year. The new fiscal year, there's nothing scheduled, but eventually we're going to have to decide on replacing the roof, but that's not on the schedule. The new year, we're projecting a general fund deficit of about $472,000. And this is primarily due to reduced permit fees and the timing of state grant admin funds, which we received this year, but we'll spend in the new year. Even with the deficits projected, the total fund balance remains in a healthy position by the end of the year at almost $5.2 million, as unreserved at another $1.9 million for special purposes. And this this concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Rosa. Questions. So we'll look for raised hands here and see if there's any questions from board members. Sam raised some good points in the budget personnel nominating committee. Okay, no, there we go. All right, Director Askew.
Two questions. The budget hearing that was held in April, how do we notice that? Because I'm not sure that I had that on my calendar or knew that we were hosting it.
I don't know.
We did not have a hearing in April. We had a workshop, and that's for the public. It's not typically something we send to the board. That was done on, as I explained earlier, we had radio and various newspapers and online. So we've sent it far and wide. And we typically don't get very much response for our workshops. We're lucky. Typically we'll see maybe a couple consulting firms or a regulated business will show up. But I don't think in my time here, we've ever seen public show up.
Okay. Is there a way that we could include the board on those outreach distribution list so that we can help, maybe advertise it to the community that we know might be interested in participating? That would be great.
It's a great idea. Forward.
And then the other question that I had was, I think back in, it may have been February or March or April, at some point we had talked about the EV incentive program and the $500,000. And there was some discussion then about looking into the possibility of adding 10 or 15% of that total and allocating it for e-bike incentives. And I'm not sure if there's support from the board, but I've had some time to go back and sort of continue reading about the value of e-bikes in reducing local miles traveled. And it does seem to be that there's more and more information coming out that increasing purchase of e-bikes is some, it is valuable in terms of getting people out of their cars for local trips. And since that conversation as well, the Congressman Jimmy Panetta has come out with legislation that would also potentially incentivize the purchase of e-bikes. And so I'm thinking that it would be something that we can do to piggyback on and look and see how successful it is and continue to get more information. So that would be a request that I make, that we take of that $500,000 line item and take 15% and put it towards e-bike incentive program.
Yeah, and my understanding is that is happening. So we are committed to having the e-bikes, and that's part of that line item.
Do you know by chance what percentage of that EV line item is for e-bikes?
I'd have to get back to you unless you know, Rosa.
No, I don't.
Yeah,
that would
be a David question.
Yeah,
David. We had not set an amount, and so if we could get some guidance from the board on that, that would be helpful.
But I seem to remember we did talk about this, and there was an amount. Do you remember, Wendy? There was an amount, and it was going to be a pilot project. I don't think 15% would be $75,000. I mean, that's almost as much as what we contribute to the wood stove change out program. That'd be significant. I think. I don't know if there was that strong a report or support. Do you remember what was the amount per, or did you call?
I had 15% written down, but I'm not sure if that was my suggestion or what the agreement was. I would propose 15%. I think we could make a significant impact, and it would give us, within 1 year's data, really good information to be able to determine what we do moving forward.
Okay, do you remember how much per bike it was, though? Was it $150?
That seems to be what I recall.
That.
I think it was $150 per bike, and that was where most of the discussion was centered. Of course, allocating for a certain amount, we just don't know what type of response. Subsequent to that, we've seen that Costco's come out with a $350 electric bike. So, there's going to be all over the map with respect to the types of vehicles that people are going to try to fund. So we're taking it sort of cautiously as we move forward, but we can firm up the details and report back certainly for our next hearing.
Well, I'm sure we'll get feedback from other board members. Then we could come back to you, Director Askew, if that's okay.
Yeah, that works. And this is our opportunity to give direction. So throwing it out there. Thank you.
Well, you got it. Was there any other questions you had for Rosa? No. Okay. All right. So Director Labar, to you.
Thank you, Chair. And I, Director Rudisku's suggestion, I agree with. Percentage-wise, though, I would definitely hold off on any decision. I'd keep a small amount, but I definitely would encourage Richard, if we could have staff meet with the Bicycle and Pedestrian Committee, give them an update with TAMPSE. They've had concerns on electric bikes, and I think it's important to hear. And some of those were on how electric bikes are rated on their engines, and that dictates the speed. So that might be some more useful information on tailoring a program. And then what you just mentioned about a 350 e-bike, making sure that maybe it's geared towards the lower cost bikes where they get more bang for the buck as opposed to the premium, because that would elicit more opportunities for lower incomes to participate.
Great.
And that might be a way to just focus it too, right? Bikes under a certain amount, you get X dollars. Bikes over that amount, you get less.
Yeah, so as I stated earlier, this is another one of those pioneering avenues we're taking. I'm not aware of any other air district that is actually incentivizing the purchase or lease or of e-bikes. So, but we're sort of doing it in a vacuum of information, because I've seen a lot of anecdotal information out there, but no real hard fast data with respect to it. And that's probably because there just isn't there yet. So we have to generate data. We're designing the program so that we can try to extract as much information as possible about the motivation for people to and their their driving habits, so we have some data. But this has been the problem with bicycles all along is, you know, we used to do a lot of funding of bicycle paths and that sort of thing. And we just found that the data was all over the map with respect to really what kind of emission reductions we were getting. We even paid Ambag and others to come up with their own emission data. And that still is a little bit lacking. And then we have a lot of bike paths to nowhere throughout our three counties. So a lot of projects got built with bike paths, but they don't intersect with any other bike path. So, you know, this just adds to the, it's just sort of a mess, and hopefully someday it will all come together and we can be a part of that. We're more than happy to do that.
So I just want to reiterate, that's why working with the Bike and Ped Committee of TAMC, I think would be very, very helpful on this aspect. Thank you.
And we'll also reach out to Santa Cruz Transportation as well.
Yeah, I think it'll be helpful to hear from our directors on this. I mean, I think I remember pilot program, $150. I don't know if we've capped or assigned a certain percentage to, say, hydrogen powered vehicles versus EV plug-in versus, you know, hybrids and so forth. So let's keep going. This is good feedback. And any other questions for Rosa regarding the budget? So I see Jack Dillis, and then we can go to Chris Lopez. So Jack?
Yeah, I just have one question. For the total operating budget, training, travel, district board expense, I see a significant increase up to 157,000 or so. Is that because we're coming out of COVID? Are we catching up on training? Is there something new going on, just to get a general answer? That?
That's exactly right. In the past, we have had similar levels of travel training in our budget, and we had pretty much zero this past year. So we're catching up on that, and that's conservative. I've asked the supervisor and managers to take a hard look at that, so that could possibly come down for the final budget hearing. But at this point, that's seems to be a reasonable number. And we can always do budget adjustments in the future if it doesn't pan out like we're going to use that amount.
Thanks. I'm a strong believer in training, so that's money well spent. Thank you.
Yes.
Great.
We have some new staff coming on board also, so that I'm sure some training will be required for them.
Great. Okay. Back to Director Lopez. Floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to express support for the concept of funding e-bikes. I don't have an issue with that, but the number, I think, is something we have to have a more robust discussion on. I'm not sure 15% is the right amount. You know, my concern is just that we still have many parks, including county parks, where the bikes are banned. So we're saying, hey, get on the bike, but not in our park. You know, that's we need the policy to catch up with the concept. I'm supportive of it. I just want to make sure that, again, we're having conversations across all of our partnerships to make sure that we're supporting the use of them, rather than saying, hey, yeah, go buy it, spend a little money, we'll support you, and then you can't use it here locally. So again, just want to make sure that we're having all the right conversations in the context, but supportive of the concept, would love to see something brought back for the board to consider as a more firm policy. Thank you.
Great.
So just to respond, if I may, Mr. Chair, I've heard that direction, and I will commit to bringing this back when we do present the final budget for adoption, along with numbers, hard numbers. But I would agree. We know that, for instance, wood stoves get super high reductions, as well as electric vehicles. So we certainly don't want to shortchange ourselves in that regard. And since it's a pilot project, I would love to come back to the board the following year and say, this thing was just amazing and it looks like we're saving a lot of emissions. Therefore, we need to add additional dollars and maybe look at other programs that we could cut back. So we'll make that commitment to bring that to the board next time, and we could have a better discussion around hard, fast numbers.
Yeah, I would just echo that. I mean, great idea. Appreciate the enthusiasm. Director Askew, I think there's some innovation here. We are using these funds for greenhouse gas reduction. We need to know and be able to qualify the reduction. And so taking a shot at it, and any of the background you've got that you can pass on via either Rich or Ann, and we can check out, that's super cool and helpful too. So, okay. So I think direction's there. And I don't know, you know, as the originator of this, Director Askew, $150 per bike. Was that the number? That's what I'm remembering from previous discussions.
Yeah, I just pulled up my notes and it sounded like $150 per bike with the low income doubling of the benefit that matched the way that the benefit was doubled for the EV cars. But I think I heard other trustees just say that they wanted to have additional conversation about the structure of the program. So maybe we include all of that. I'm not set on a hard and fast number at this point.
Great. Okay. Well, with that in mind and the $350 Costco special and this emerging interest and so forth, I think maybe staff can look it over and follow up with Director Askew. And in this budget, we can include something there. Looking to directors for anything else pertaining to the budget as a whole for the year. This was our hearing. We had discussion in our budget personnel and nominating committee that went back to staff. So our next meeting would be our final vote. Okay, we're going to the public now. One quick second to look here. I don't see anything. Okay, Ann, did you get any emails? Okay. Great. So we're back to the committee. Again, this is a hearing. This is an opportunity to just discuss the budget. We've had direction from our committee. So with that, I don't think we need any sort of vote at this time. And we'll move on to our next item, which is a hearing on our proposed revisions to district fee scheduling. So with that, we go back, or at this point, we're with Amy. So Amy, the floor is yours. Let's see. There you are. Good. Thanks.
Yep. Okay. Good afternoon, directors. I'm going to be doing the presentation. I'm Amy Climo, Engineering Compliance Manager. And each year, as part of the budget process, we look at our fee rules. And this year, we are proposing changes to four of our fee rules. The overarching district fee rule 300, rule 301, which is our fee schedules, Rule 306, which is our asbestos NESHAP fees, and then Rule 308, which is our Title V federal operating permit fees. So the major proposals in the fee rules are a potential increase up to 2%. And as Rosa mentioned, that's the consistent with the CPI. We're proposing to make adjustments to the gasoline throughput categories to align those with regulatory requirements. And I'll explain that further. We're going to clarify that the toxics fee for permit applications and annual permit renewals applies to all permits, with the California Air Resources Board adopting their criteria pollutant and toxics reporting regulation that will end up applying to nearly, as we can tell, all of our sources, and it expands the list of toxics that have to be reported to hundreds of toxics they've added. And so we're going to need to look at toxics from all of our permitted sources. And then we have language in our Rule 308 that we need to align with our Rule 300 past changes that were just, it's a cleanup to make sure that those two rules have the same language. So this slide shows an example of some fee categories and what a 2% increase means. So our permit filing fee is currently $217. A 2% increase is $4, so the new filing fee starting July 1 would be $221. The general permit application fee of $968 would increase by $19, so the new fee July 1st would be $987. Our annual renewal fee, the smallest category is the billable tons less than 0.1, and that's currently $216. So that would also be a $4 increase to be $220. Our emergency diesel engines are assessed a $373 annual fee, and that would increase by $7. So that would be $380. And finally, our current hourly staff rate is $154. That would be an increase of $3. So the new rate would be $157 per hour. So this slide shows the changes that we're proposing for the gasoline throughput categories. And the first change is the category zero to, it's currently 100,000 gallons. We're proposing to change that to 120,000 gallons. That is consistent with our rule 1002, where if your throughput is greater than 120,000 gallons, you have to do additional phase two installation on your facility. So this would align that category to our rule 1002. The next fee category would end up being $120,000 to $400,000. And then the third category we're proposing to change from 800,000 to 600,000. And that's because when a gas station hits that 600,000 gallon per year throughput, they're required to install something called in-station diagnostics. And it's kind of a computer program that monitors the vapor recovery system at the station. And so we want to align this category to that regulatory requirement. And then that would follow that the next category would then be adjusted to 600,000 to 1.2 million gallons. So those are the changes we're proposing for the throughputs. And then this shows you what I mentioned about our toxic program fees. And it's just to clarify the language that these fees apply to all permit applications and all annual renewals to support our toxics program, which is going to become more workload for us as this state regulation rolls out over the next 5 years. And then with our rule 306, our asbestos knee shop fees, we're proposing no fee increase. I'm just gonna skip ahead really quickly. We did get a public comment that our asbestos fees were too high. And so we felt like we would go back and look. And so let me go back. And so we reviewed the air districts nearby. So we just went north and south. Bay Area's current fee for 160 square feet is $754. And San Luis Obispo is $687. And our current fee is $806. And for example, Bay Area is increasing some of their other fee categories, but they are not increasing their asbestos fees. And so we felt the $806, we can not propose to increase asbestos fees. Another reason for this is that some of you may recall back in our fiscal year 2019-2020, we did a CPI increase of 4.5% on most of our other fee categories, but we did raise our asbestos fees by 10%. And so we think what we're seeing now is perhaps we've achieved that place where we're achieving better cost recovery for this program. And that was another reason why we felt no fee increase was necessary. But we do want to clarify and add to the rule that there will be a cancellation fee for demolition notices also. Currently, the way the rule is written is that cancellation fee would only apply if someone notifies us for a project that includes the removal of asbestos-containing materials. But we also want to have the ability to assess a cancellation fee for those notifications that might just be for demolition. So the other part of this public comment related to residential housing. The federal NESHAP does not apply to single family dwellings. And the only way that we could regulate those types of dwellings would be to adopt our own separate regulation more stringent than the federal NESHAP. And our concern with doing that is that this would create a lot of extra workload for us to track all residential single family dwelling renovations and potentially demolitions. And so at this time, we're not planning on having a separate rule that would allow us to do that. And then finally, this is the language in Rule 308, the Title V Federal Operating Regulation and Fee Rule, and just proposing to delete the language shown in red. This was language that was removed from Rule 300 back in 2018. And we just had missed that the same duplicate language was in this rule. So it's just a cleanup of the language. So with that, I will take any questions or comments?
Thank you,
Thank you, Amy. Well, there we have it. So we're looking for hands at this point. Anybody that might have questions or comments? Okay, Director Askew.
Thanks. Full of questions today. In terms of the fees, and forgive me for my ignorance in asking this question, but are there other air district fees that are associated with housing development projects? And I'm referencing back to there's a fee for our new home sold at East Garrison to help fund some of the, it looks like, infrastructure ongoing needs there. But are there other development fees for new affordable housing projects would specifically be what I'm wondering about?
I don't think so. So that East Garrison fee came out of the CEQA. And it was meant to be a mitigation measure for the emissions that were projected to be over our CEQA threshold. And in order for them to get the emissions from that project below the thresholds, they had to basically pay in the future to achieve emission reductions from ag pumps or school buses. The only other thing I could think of is, Rich may know the air districts, but a few may have indirect source review or indirect source rules where they may charge a fee for increasing vehicle miles associated with a project. But again, that's usually tied to a CEQA project. We haven't had to do that because of our attainment status for federal and state ambient air quality standards.
Awesome. Thank you. That's really helpful.
Yeah.
And I should just add that the NESHAP is a national emission standard for hazardous air pollutant. So that's in your acronym folder if you have that right in front of you. But that's a federal program that we have delegation by the feds to do. And it's there's no safe limit exposure to asbestos. So it's a really important public health program. And so we take that seriously, but we do not regulate down to the residential area. Just like we don't really regulate wood stoves. We do as much as we can to incentivize the purchase of new ones, but we don't get in the business of typically residential or down to that level of granularity. So it's usually mostly businesses, but good question.
Yeah. Okay, anybody else? Okay, well, this is a public hearing. There is no vote on it. And, there's Mike. Yep, you had a question?
Just quickly on the asbestos fee, it kicks in when it's over the 160 square foot or the 260 linear feet?
Correct. That's the regulatory amount where that federal NESHAP that Rich was just talking about begins.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair.
No sweat. Okay. All good. Seeing nothing else. Let's see. Looking to the public real quick here. Not seeing any hands raised. Andy, you did receive any correspondence? Okay, good. Well, that concludes our hearing on these fee adjustments. We do have closed session. This is the close of our regular scheduled business. Les, will we have anything to report?
There will be no report out, Chair, and I think we will just adjourn from closed session. To all the directors, I sent a separate invitation to the closed session. I trust you all got it. Once we log off here, if you would log into that Zoom meeting.
Well, great. I want to thank everybody for attending today's Monterey Bay Air Resources Board meeting. We'll go ahead and stand adjourned. Thanks. We'll see you in closed session.